Welcome back to today's episode of Dissecting Popular IT Nerds. I'm your host, Doug Kameen, and today I'm talking with Brad Richardson, an IT director in the renewable energy space. Welcome to the show, Brad.
Thanks, Doug. I'm really grateful to be here.
Yeah. So really great having you on the show. I'm going to dive right into this and just go right. You're doing a lot of work. If you go look at your LinkedIn profile and some of the things you're putting up on LinkedIn and stuff, you're really focused on some I call it some big stuff, you know, the silent revolution, as you call it, and some other things related to that. They feel like really important things that you're trying to push forward and bring to light, you know, some important information, some important thoughts and stuff like that. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, I'd be glad to. Silent revolution is really my focus on management, but mid-management and the talent pool that a lot of companies have at that level. It's actually springboarding off of a lot of other great work that's out there that a lot of us feed from, right? Whether it's Simon Sinek or Adam Grant or a lot of great material that we're taking in and that I know a lot of people in companies are, they're getting ideas from, but then having a hard time implementing or seeing, change or effect in their companies. And so Silent Revolution is part of an initiative on my part to build a community to be able to help people to practically apply a lot of these great managerial and company philosophies and just help the rubber meet the road, help it actually get traction. At the same time, helping people in different positions raise up and realize the full potential.
Awesome. So there's a parallel project you're working on too with that. Can you tell us a little bit about that too?
Right. And that is the corporate interface, which I'm working on a book that hopefully will be coming out shortly. How those
awesome.
Things go. Right. The corporate interface dovetails in with that. And it's really just my feeling that so many of the principles that we learn and that we work with in the IT realm and development, software development realm, have application all the way through our companies. And I'm looking at really at larger companies, enterprises, level companies, but any company can benefit. And it's the idea that whether it's, agile methodologies or even in the engineering first principles, different theories and thoughts like that, they have a lot to speak to the whole organization of ways that we can do business better.
Mm-hmm.
And the entire business, from our work areas, how we interact with our coworkers, architecture of buildings, then into our software, all of it is one interface. It's one giant interface that we use as a company. And there are a million ways that we can gain efficiency and productivity by paying attention to a lot of the minutiae of what we do every day. And so the corporate interface is just that. It's looking at our company as one giant user interface. And how do we interact with it? And how can we improve it?
Oh, that's awesome. So you've been in leadership in a variety of different capacities for a long time. So you're drawing on your personal experiences, the changes and challenges that you've had as you've gone through your career and things like that too. What really was the genesis or the inspiration that made you be like, I want to do this? What can you point to? Like, sometimes people do these things and they're like, there was that one time this thing happened and I was like, this is what I wanted and this is when it started.
Right. I think it kind of crept up on me. Mm-hmm. My last role as director of a renewable company was pivotal. It was an interesting role because I was stepping in. It was almost still a startup, very early, very young company, growing very mm-hmm. fast. And we went very quickly from that into a merger that was a challenging merger. And in the midst of all that and getting all the infrastructure in place, talking enterprise architecture, figuring all of that, I also noticed and saw just these gaps in not just that organization, but in organizations in general. I realized it was much more widespread of just breakdowns in the middle, right? Breakdowns in mid-management. And a lot of other people have a lot of great stuff to say about that. Again, Simon Sinek, he had a short video that was a springboard for me. It's a few just a few minutes, and he just talks about how things break in the middle. And, you know, that's a phrase that I think many are familiar with. And so my question was, how can we stop that from happening? It's like, okay, I don't like just identifying problems. If I see a problem, I want to try to help. I want to try to fix it. And so I ended up doing some manager training, kind of stepping out of my role as an IT director and doing more management training and working to improve the communication up and down the chain, so we wouldn't break in the middle, especially in a company where things are moving so fast. And so that, and when I, once I started doing that, I realized that's really where my passion was. I still love IT. I still love technology, but I see all of these as connected. I see all of them as connected, and that we need to deal with them holistically. And so that kind of gave me the inspiration, I guess. That was probably the main point where I finally started to launch in and say, you know, this is something that I think can benefit such a wider audience, not just because it wasn't just us, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, whatever's happening in one company, it's usually happening at a lot of companies and throughout the business world. And so I wanted to be able to take it wider and help more people.
At Dissecting Popular IT Nerds, we expect to win, and we expect our IT directors to win. And one of those areas where we know that we can help you win is internet service providers. As an IT director tasked with managing internet connectivity, few vendor relationships can prove more painfully frustrating than the one with your internet service provider. The array of challenges seems never ending, from unreliable uptime and insufficient bandwidth to poor customer service and hidden fees. It's like getting stuck in rush hour traffic. Dealing with ISPs can try one's patience even on the best of days. So whether you are managing one location or 100 locations, our back office support team and vendor partners are the best in the industry. And the best part about this is none of this will ever cost you a dime.
Great. Thank you for sharing that. It gets me thinking about, you mentioned, you think about, you know, you're in IT. You know, you're an IT leader, but you're thinking about this in a broader sense, in the holistic sense of the leadership and the qualities that you're bringing to the table here. The things that you need to be successful, they don't just exclusively apply to the IT space. They're going to apply across the business enterprise. And in, I think for me, one of the things that I think about with regard to IT leaders is there's this, I think in my experience, and I'm gonna make a pretty sweeping generalization here for a second. so danger, the danger sign is flashing right now, right? But there's like two broad buckets of different types of IT leaders. There's the ones who show up to do, I call it the job. And I'm not saying this is bad. It's just, but they're the folks who are like, I'm here to make sure that the servers turn on in the morning, or the computers turn on in the morning, the servers don't shut down at night accidentally, the battery backups, batteries are replaced on the schedule, and that stuff's done correctly. You know, it's very tactically oriented. And then there's another group of IT leaders, and I feel like IT is, I don't know, maybe even unique in this space, that both of these leaders coexist in the roles. And, you know, sometimes it depends on who you get when you hire somebody. But the other group is more people that have broader business sense, but happen to be good at IT stuff, you know, and then they kind of land in the IT bucket, but they're really business leaders at the end of the day, more than anything else. And like, so with hearing you describe that, like, I feel like you fit into that other bucket of somebody who's got that business leadership experience and insight, but happens to also be good at and have background in the technology space.
Right. Well, and I'm a little different, I think, in the angle that I take, and I've tried to be upfront about that too every time I go into any type of technology discussions, because you're right. You're 100% right. You have the division of the two, and you can have someone who's a great technician, lights out technician who maybe isn't someone who would be comfortable or is really gifted in the management side of things, and vice versa. Mm-hmm. But lost my train of thought for a second, but
that's okay.
I am more in that space of the management side of things. More of the big picture, and just naturally, so that's kind of how my brain works. But that's also why I guess I feel like anyone, you have to lean into your gifts. You have to go where you can be of the most value. And I've found that for those of us that have technical knowledge and you can swim in the management waters or the executive waters, I think we serve our companies and we serve IT the best when we go ahead and do that, because we can represent the technology perspective in a different way. Mm-hmm. Someone who is just a good technician, they talk tech speak, but maybe they can't translate it for the rest of the business, number one. Number two, a second point I'd make with that is that there is so much that the way that we organize things in our technology that, again, can apply to the wider business, and I think it should. See, I think it should in this day and age, because almost every business is essentially a technology business now, mm-hmm. right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely, for sure.
Right, from top to bottom, we're dependent on it. It defines so much of what we do and how we do it. And it used to be that your IT department kind of came along for the ride. Mm-hmm. You know, there were other, and rightly so in some cases. You know, you're there to, as you said, you're there to make sure the servers are running and everything stays on and people stay working. That's still part of it. But it's so much the skeleton. The digital framework is so much the skeleton now of our businesses and how they operate, that I believe that when we're talking about, you know, if we're using agile methodology or whatever type of methodology that you want to use in organizing your projects, it's not just for development projects anymore. It's not just for IT projects. That can extend out very well and scale very well to the rest of our businesses. And when you do that, you automatically have your entire business in sync.
Mm-hmm.
Right, from the executive level all the way down into your technical implementations, what software you use, what platforms you're using, you start to think differently as a business. And I think it simplifies things, and so that's definitely the side that I fall down on.
Mm-hmm. So I'd like to pivot for a second and talk about the value of empathy, and in people's careers and other stuff like that, you've publicly, you know, that's why I say publicly, but like on like your LinkedIn profile and other stuff like that, like you've shared, like, you know, I've had ups and downs in my career and I've had challenges and stuff like that. And I think like you could probably share with other listeners a story about, your journey, I think, of empathy and when it's valuable and how it's valuable as a leader and other stuff like that. So I guess maybe I'll just leave that out there and just like let you just kind of ask about it.
Oh yeah, no, definitely can. How much time do we have?
Yeah, that's right.
like a lot of people, there's a long story. When we get to that side of things, I always like to frame it this way, that every person that I meet, I know that everybody's got their story. Mm-hmm. And when you talk to someone on a given day, you're getting to see the last page, most recent page that's being written in that story. But for most of us, it's chapters and chapters and maybe volumes deep.
Mm-hmm.
And that I think is so important to just keep that in mind, because we all have our stories of challenge and brokenness. For me, my first wife died in 2016 after a cancer battle. Mm-hmm. We were married for 25 years.
Mm.
And that obviously was life altering for me. And the biggest thing I took away from that was this perspective. It's just that we know so little about what's going on with the people in front of us, number one. Number two, we can't really understand completely, right, what's going on under the surface and how it affects them. Even other people, some people will come up and they want to talk. If they know you've gone through loss and you've dealt with grief, they want to talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the most important lesson is that I can't understand your grief.
Mm-hmm.
I can't understand, and you can't understand mine, not completely. I can understand, somewhat. We can connect a little in that I understand you're going through grief. Mm-hmm. I understand you have pain. I understand you have struggles, but they're going to be totally unique to you. And that was a major takeaway for me from that. And I think it helps immensely when you want to manage people.
Mm-hmm.
Because then you go and you look at your team. If you're managing 5, 50, or 500, that's how many stories you have.
Yeah.
Right? in your department, in your community, right? And they're all interacting, and we do this dance of how do we get everyone we're thinking about how do we get people to perform well. Well, I think most people are going to perform well automatically if we're acknowledging and recognizing all the lower level things that are going on in their lives. And so I think as far as empathy goes, it just requires realizing that you're just like me, mm-hmm. in that you've got stuff you struggle with. You've got stuff that you're hurting with, and how would I want someone to treat me?
Mm-hmm.
Right. I would want someone to come along, at least try to understand as best they can, and then manage from that perspective. And so to me, that's all it is.
Yeah. I'm really happy you shared this in your story here. And sometimes those types of challenging stories they're tough to share. And sometimes there's also catharsis in being able to share and talk a little more about it. For me, I think, so my day job, I'm the CITO of a mental health nonprofit. And in our work, so I've received and helped support an enormous apparatus of people who provide this type of training, like what you're describing about the stories for other people that, you don't know what stories they have. You're only seeing today's page. You're not seeing the rest of the book, all these things. This is it really touches on something that is close to me because of the work that I support and I do in my job. So we have a whole business of people that support schools and like grief and loss, so like if a traumatic or tragic event has happened, how do we build resiliency in those institutions to set that up and stuff? And then internally, we receive our own trainings on how to do that, how to build empathy with your other teammates and other stuff like that. So like the way I want to tie this back here, I guess, is to think about the perspective that you bring. I would say that it's unique in the IT space, or uncommon in the IT space, maybe is the right word. Unique isn't quite the right word. Uncommon. Right. And I think it's super, super valuable. And that's really why I was asking you about it, because I'm happy you shared the story. And I think about how people who listen to the podcast in the IT space, we're very technically oriented group. Typically, there's a lot of practicality that happens in how we do things. And it can be really hard to find examples of people in the IT space who have deep empathy and deep understanding about, I call it the human condition, and how humans function and how people show up and stuff like that. So,
100%. And it's interesting because really our IT work, we get so focused on the technology, but at the end of the day, it's about people, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Really, right? I mean, we're there to serve a team and help them be as productive as possible. If you do troubleshooting on any level, you do have to learn how to be a good listener,
mm-hmm.
and to really hear what people are saying and identify the issues at the root cause if possible. So it is about people, and I do think that gets lost, and I do like to focus on that. And you'll see me mention that online quite a bit. Just the fact that if we lose the plot, right? Mm-hmm. I think we lose the plot if all of a sudden it just becomes about the technology and doing the next greatest neat, the new shiny, the next new thing,
mm-hmm.
As opposed to really caring about people. I think the more you care about people, the better you're going to do much better in technology. You're going to do much better as an IT leader, because if you care about people, it gives you a superior motivation, I think, for producing better solutions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. So diving a little bit into your background and history. So can you tell us a little bit about how did you develop as a leader? Where was your career? What was the progression for you?
Well, again, very unique.
Yeah.
I've had a split career. I've been a touring musician as well. With a band.
There goes the tell us something that people wouldn't expect about you question that I was going to ask later. That's awesome.
So IT was actually my plan B. Every artist, musician, usually you always have a plan B, right? Because that pays the bills.
Yep.
And luckily, thankfully, I guess I've always been good at technology and got into it actually just back in middle school. This would have been the Apple II days, mm-hmm. right? Back at the beginning of personal computers. I just fell into it, mm-hmm. simply because, you know, you do music when you can, and then I do IT work when I could, and I've worked for some very good leaders and companies and other than maybe not so good experiences, but they were all learning experiences, mm-hmm. and just continued to try to serve the people that were there. And I feel that I was just blessed enough to have opportunity to step up and step up and step up. And it's all just been about trying to fulfill the needs of the company at any given moment. Mm-hmm. That's really it. It was more organic. There was no great plan there. You know, I didn't have any huge desire to excel at this level in IT work. But now that I'm here, I am glad that I am, for the very reasons that we discussed.
Mm-hmm.
Because I feel like I have something to contribute. I feel that everybody has something to contribute. And I do think it benefits all of us when we lean into our gifts.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned through that progression there, you mentioned about not all your experiences were always, you know, great. Like, and I have the same thing, you know, like you go back in history and be like, there was that time this thing happened. You know, I was like, I'm out, you know, we separated ways or whatever the case may be. Just drawing, I guess, on your focus and your background of, you know, being empathetic and being, you know, the things that you're trying to bring to the space that are more than just practical. What lessons did you, well, I'll stop for a second. I always try to think that even the bad experiences, you have good things that come from, you know, like, you know, there's ultimately something that you can take away from that bad experience to say, you know what, like I did learn this at least, you know, from that, even if the experience wasn't great. And how did you incorporate that? And what maybe some of the biggest bad lessons, good lessons from bad things that happened to you? Like what was?
Right. I think the biggest lesson I'd have to highlight is just the need to advocate for the technical needs of a company and the technical team within a company.
Mm-hmm.
Because there were many stops along my path that I thought I had good ideas. I didn't know that I did. I thought this made sense to me. This looked like a better way. But I didn't have the confidence to step up and really put those ideas out there, even though I had an avenue at the executive or leadership level to do so.
Mm.
There was always, you know, an area, whether it was just self-doubt or whatever it was, where I'd want to step back. And the problem is that quite often I saw bad things happen from my inaction, right? The company maybe was making not the best decisions, and I didn't really advocate for the better way. I was unwilling to stick my neck out, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
As a lot of times we all are, right? There's fear in business. There's a lot of fear in business. It's, you know, we have to please the people who sign our paychecks.
Yep.
if we want to have a job, that's usually how it works.
Mm-hmm.
So learning to navigate that and be able to respectfully and in a productive way, still kind of go to battle with things that if you see pitfalls, if you see dangers ahead, and to be able to warn and guide and all that. So every bad experience, even though, you know, I could qualify those as a bad experience because, oh, the company did this or the company did that, at the end, I still saw where I had an opportunity to maybe change that outcome, and I didn't do anything. So as I've grown in my career, I've simply tried to be more, really just more assertive, mm-hmm. and then learn to do that in a way that, you know, doesn't offend people because sure. you could just, and I've done that. I've made those mistakes, you know, where you just kind of bowl in. And so you learn. And I hate to sound like a broken record, but I know I keep coming back to that is a lot of this motivation for getting people to speak up in the workplace, learn how to do that productively all throughout an organization because, you know, people are amazing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, human beings are amazing. Almost everybody that you talk to has some amazing potential. And so often we sell ourselves short and we don't have avenues to speak up. And the more that we do that, I think the more businesses can succeed. And when businesses succeed, we all do well by it, right? Mm-hmm. We all do better. It benefits all of us. But yeah, so but back to your original question, yeah, the bad experiences has mostly been learning how to speak up in a productive way. That's what I've taken from it, regardless of whatever went sideways in the business.
So I was trying to think through this, but I had kind of an angle in my question, and now I forgot. Or I kind of lost the thread of it.
I got it.
This is what happened. So you know, here on the podcast, we can just fill time with some questions for a moment, right? That, like they won't know. This is miscellaneous banter. But I know exactly what I want to ask about. I asked you a bunch of stuff about, you know, you've had challenges. We talked about empathy. We talked about some of the things that have been kind of like challenging experiences for you, but I want to make sure we get the opportunity to talk about your leadership skills, the things that you value, and the things that you want to bring to the table whenever you lead a team. So, you know, can you speak to that a little bit? Like, what are your core values that you want to impart?
Right. So, core values, just on the leadership side. Let me think for a second. Most important things are you advocate for your team.
Mm-hmm.
You work for them. They don't work for you.
Mm. Yeah.
Your team needs to feel protected. They need to feel safe. And there needs to be transparency and honesty
mm-hmm.
all the way through. For my teams, I really only have usually one rule, one big rule, and that is you're honest with me.
Mm-hmm.
If you're honest with me, I can work with anything else. Almost anything else.
There are limits.
Right? But if you're honest with me, and that needs to be there, because bad news needs to travel fast, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's like in a company. To me, bad news needs to travel the fastest, and it's the hardest to have travel in a company at all, because who wants to give the boss bad news?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, you're drawing straws to see who takes the short straw to deliver that news. And yet you're going to be so much more successful when all the bad news is out there, you can all deal with it as a team, collaboratively and constructively. And so that honesty piece is really the biggest thing. I have yet to run into anyone with any kind of technological ability that I can't manage, right? Mm-hmm. That I can't help. You know, they can't do the job. They can't be trained to do the job. But that does require decent management, which is also, you know, I have a focus on managing and not just technology. But yeah, those are my primary things. Anything that will help build that trust and transparency and communication within a team.
Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned about protecting teams, and that's something that I too share that kind of value. It is a really critical value about leading teams is that is the boss or the manager, however, you know, whatever term you want to use, you know, right. About the leader in my role. One of the key parts of the role that I fill is that I am the shield in a certain way.
Yes.
For you, you know, as the staff and things like that. And what I mean by that in specifics is like, if there's great news to go tell, I want you to tell it. If we have to deliver some bad news, I'll take care of that. You know, I will take the arrows for the team, because that's how this, you know, like that's I'm paid, if you will, and I'm given the authority to make the decisions. But that means I also have to own them too. And I have to own the team's decisions and the team's work. And if we have a challenge, I want to be the one to step up. I'm not going to go push out, you know, this admin and be like, hey, well, go tell them the bad news about what just transpired. And and then, you know, and that comes back to like larger contexts of how you build the perception amongst the other folks in the company about communication. So like in my current company, sometimes we would do when we do maintenance work, you know, we'll send out a note to all staff, you know, so it's like 500 people in our company and we'll send out an all staff email. And when I started, that would come from staff. And I was like, no, that should come from me. Because the first question that happens is if it comes from staff and then something doesn't work, the very first question they ask is, well, did Doug know about this? You know, or did the boss know? Did you, you know, who did you clear this with? You know? So if it comes from me, like, at least you know that I knew about it because I did send the email saying that this is what we're doing. So it goes ahead and like forecloses. So it's another aspect of like trying to protect your team from unnecessary interactions, because I certainly want them to interact with the rest of the company. But like, if they're there to do this task and get the job done, and then something isn't going right, the last thing they need to be doing is like answering to six different people that are calling them and be like, what's the status? Is it fixed? What'd you do? Did you ask these right people? Does Doug know about this?
Yes. No. And the accountability, right? You can, and showing that accountability isn't fatal. I think I see in that, and I think that's important. Yeah, because if they can see that as a leader, you step up, you're not afraid to go, yeah, that was on me. Then they're going to be much more forthcoming, right? When they're in a similar situation, they've seen the pattern. So no, I like that. That's great.
Yeah, and your comment about honesty too. I'm very much subscribed to the idea that I want them to be like totally honest with me. Even if you're looking for another job, tell me, because I'll give you my first reference, but then at least I know you're looking and I have some heads up, and I don't get like 2-3 weeks notice where I'm like, oh, you were looking and I didn't know, you know, like, because I won't talk you out of leaving. If you're determined to leave, like, I'm going to help you leave, not because I don't want you there, but because I understand that people's careers don't always start and end with me.
Yeah. No, absolutely. And oh gosh, that's so good and so important. But that's a whole bigger discussion, right, about culture. And a culture that feels safe. That kind of safety, I think, is rare. It can be hard to come by, but it produces a dividend. I love training people up, right, and helping people move on in their careers. And it's exactly what you mentioned, just this idea that they're not going to be here forever. I mean, who would be? I mean, all of us, especially in today's working world, the way that we all transfer between companies, it's just, you can't assume that. But I love it and it actually makes it easier. I mean, if I've done my bit to train my guys up and help them max out their skills and all of this, and then they go on and they go on to bigger and better things, I feel like that's a win.
That's right.
Right. That's a success. Mm-hmm. But I think it also helps, and this, we don't like to think about this, but it also helps, you know, if you end up having to have a reduction or something like that. I am looking to make sure the people that work for me are going to be well equipped then for the next role if it comes about unexpectedly for them. You know, it's like that, and it makes it easier for me to make good decisions for the business because I don't feel as bad. It's like, oh, you know, we're pushing you out. And oh, by the way, we totally stunted your growth while you were here. We just kind of treated you like a house, or not a house plant, but we just kept you in the dark. You know, we just kept you over there and wanted you to do this one little thing and you didn't grow at all. And now we're having to let you go, which is very different from, no, we developed you here. We gave you opportunity. You've grown. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it stinks that now, you know, maybe we have to let you go, but I know that I've prepared you for your next role too. There was something I saw online that it goes around about how that whole process goes on exit for people is just as important as our onboarding process, right? And speaks to the culture of the company as well for those that are left behind. Because, man, we can really crater our businesses when there's mass layoffs. And I think those should be avoided whenever possible. But how much different is it if you have a culture where you've been developing your people actively? And so, yes, some people, you know, there's a reduction, but then they can see their coworkers going on and doing bigger and better things. And they know that they're cared for and taken care of there. It's going to be much different. It won't crater your business like if you have the opposite, where people aren't trained, they aren't raised up. Then you have a reduction. Then you have paranoia within the company. Then you have people bailing and leaving because now they're scared for their job. You know, yeah. I mean, these things, and that's I like to focus on these principles so much because they do benefit everyone, we get in our heads so often that by consolidating information or authority and holding on to it and not communicating, that somehow we're making our own situation more secure. And usually it's the opposite. You know, the opposite is true.
That philosophy about, you know, open honesty and that communication and building that trust, ultimately that leads to the fact, like, in my experience, I have folks that, this actually just happened a few weeks ago. There was a company here in my area that had a staff reduction. And one of the people on the staff was somebody who had worked on my team almost 20 years ago, you know, probably about 17, 18 years ago. And I saw that he had posted up on, you know, LinkedIn that this reduction had happened. So I sent him a message, hey, if there's anything I can help with, you know, let me know or anything. But I just happened to, you know, I'm well connected in my area to know where to look for roles. So I ended up finding like one of my old employers, I was a county CIO. And I, you know, I was like, hey, you know, they're hiring for a network admin. And next thing you know, like he's, you know, I send the CIO, the current CIO at the county. I was like, hey, you know, this is somebody's going to be coming your way. He's a referral for me. He's good stuff, you know. Yes. And but being able to maintain those connections, like even after people leave, like he, you know, he worked for us. He took a job somewhere else. It wasn't a deal. It wasn't a thing. It was like, right. No, this is great. You're getting a promotion from what you're doing now. And I want to support that. So being able to stay connected with them and that, you know, that's like one example of the long-term benefits that people get from that in a career. There's another gentleman who you mentioned about how people, you don't work with people for very long, like at the end of the day, like it's uncommon to work with somebody for more than probably 4 or 5 years, you know, and that, even that can be long, you know, 3 years maybe. And there's a gentleman, he and I have worked together. We first met when we were in a consulting business and we worked together there. And then he was like a web developer for me for a period of time. And then when I was at the county, I hired him as a web developer. When I moved to another county, he actually came to work at the county. So like thinking about that stringing of together, he and I worked together for almost 20 years. Yeah. And that's really unusual. Like that one person, he'll probably be the one person who I've worked with for the longest period of time in my entire career.
Yeah. Yeah,
and that's already passed. Like that's already, even if I stayed at my current job till I retired, I would probably not be work with somebody for the same period of time.
Yeah, no, that is amazing. No, it's almost more like, like pro sports, right? Mm-hmm. Where you're traded between teams and you all know each other. It's a small community, but you're not always necessarily playing for the same team. I still get together regularly with an old boss of mine who's a CIO and touch base with him and for the same reason and others in our area where I am, it's actually not a huge area. It's always smaller than you think anyway, when it comes down to your industry.
Yeah.
So, you know, you always end up, you end up seeing the same faces, the same people and end up working together, which once I realized that, things became a lot easier.
Mm-hmm. Actually,
you know, you do feel like there is a sense of community. Just at least in the IT field.
Mm-hmm. So pivot again here. I'm going to go back to the thing that people wouldn't know about you. You're a traveling musician. Tell us a little bit about this. Like what did you play? What did you do? You know, were you touring with like Blue Oyster Cult or something? Or
no, my gosh. No. Well, see, I can give you the PR spin I can give you the honest spin. Because the PR spin would be, hey, they did a couple national tours. Uh-huh. We headlined them. And it was actually myself and my oldest children. They all are gifted musicians. And so we all played together. The reality of it, which is still cool, and I enjoyed it very much, but we were playing for small groups.
Yeah.
Ended up playing actually for a lot of recovery groups.
Okay.
As it turned out, just happened to be the... where we felt what we fell into, where we connected with an audience, and we got to tour around the country. We did one horrendous 3-month tour. Mm-hmm. I had the bright idea. I never like to do things small, so mm-hmm. I thought, hey, let's hit the road for like 3 months, and that was too long. But we did it all. We recorded a couple EPs, short albums, ourselves, and mm-hmm. And yeah, and I write, I play guitar, I sing, and it was a lot of fun.
That's amazing. Yeah. So we're coming up on time here on today's episode. Before we go, though, what advice would you have for upcoming, leaders that are coming up in the IT space? They're brand new, they're coming up, they're saying, hey, Brad, what do I need to focus on? What do I need to think about?
Well, since I haven't mentioned it yet, I'll probably say build a 21st century architecture where you go. For most businesses, it's cloud-based now. Mm-hmm. Don't do things on-prem, and that's a really good business case to do that. Don't be afraid to look at things from an entirely new angle, regardless of what you learn in school, because unfortunately, we pass on a lot of things that we've, how things have been done over the years, and technology progresses so fast. And now that we can be so efficient and so agile in how we design our systems and our enterprise architecture. And I would say design everything cloud first. Don't overcomplicate things. Keep it simple. And don't be afraid to keep it simple.
Nice. Great. Well, Brad, thank you so much for investing your time with us on the podcast today.
Hey, Doug, I appreciate you guys reaching out. This has been fun. And thank you very, very much for the invite.
That's a wrap on today's episode of Dissecting Popular IT Nerds. I'm Doug Kameen, and we look forward to coming to you on our next episode.